as women, we're often socialized to be polite and, you know, not to rush to the front and those types of things. But if you want to try something, if you want to work on a certain project, if you want to work with a certain team member or do a graduate study in a particular topic, you just have to ask. The worst thing that's going to happen is someone might say no, and then you just ask somebody else.
I'm Shannon Fernando, and you're listening to This is Lasan, a podcast all about amplifying the voices of incredible changemakers across the Lasan community. Welcome to a special episode celebrating International Women's Day. Today, we're joined by Peace Ikopatokan and Josephine Morgan Roth, two alumni from Lasan's Civil Engineering program. We delve into their inspiring journeys in civil engineering and discuss the challenges, successes, and unique perspectives they bring to the field. Thank you so much, Peace and Josephine, for joining us today for this very special episode on International Women's Day. So to start this episode, can you both share a bit about your background?
Sure, I can start. Thanks so much for having me. My name is Josephine. I'm a geotechnical engineer. I just finished my PhD at Lausanne in the Department of Civil Engineering. I grew up in Niagara Falls in a very international family. We traveled a lot, and I was always that kid that collected rocks at the beach. I was told I couldn't take all of the rocks home, but I didn't know at the time that geology was a career path until I arrived at Queen's, where I did my bachelor's degree in geological engineering. I thought that I was good at math and science before I got there. And then in my first year, I almost failed both math and physics. So I was really happy that geology was there as an option. So once I found my way into geological engineering, I kind of never looked back. I always really liked engineering decision-making and open-ended problems. So after working for a couple of years, I decided to go back and do a master's more on the statistical modeling side of things. I really enjoyed the research, but I thought it was a lot of stress at the time. So I went back to work for a couple of more years, and then the stars aligned and I found a supervisor at Lausanne, Dr. Matthew Pera, and started a PhD with him. And then I also found my co-supervisor, Dr. Usman Khan, who's a machine learning specialist, and my research kind of took shape from there. I now work for a tech startup in the mining and tunneling space, and I work in a research and development type role.
Thank you so much, Josephine. And yourself, Peace?
Thank you for having me this morning. My name is Peace. My background is in civil engineering. Prior to this time, I had my diploma in civil engineering in Nigeria. I also had my bachelor's degree in civil engineering, also from Nigeria. And having gathered about 3 years of experience in the industry, I came to Lausanne for my master's degree, which I'm currently rounding up. And I'm working with Professor Lam Butler.
Thank you both. Now, I know that Josephine touched upon it briefly, but what drew you both to the fields of engineering?
I would say for me, I loved sciences, but not the biology part of the science. I love physics. I love every other thing that had to do with science, calculation, forces, and all that. And I was also very good with drafting, construction drawings. I was privileged to also listen to a couple of women from WITED, Women in Technical Education, while I was in secondary school. So that spurred my interest in engineering, I'll say.
Similar to Peace, I really liked the sciences, but not the science that you can't see. I liked spatial reasoning, and I was really good at open-ended problem solving. And it's just the classic response. When you're in high school, they tell you, what if you're good at math and science, what do? You take engineering. I was lucky that my dad's also an engineer, and he never really differentiated between my sister and I and my brother that we couldn't be engineers. And funnily enough, the two of us girls are now the engineers in my family. But the other thing is specific. I'm not a civil engineer. I'm a geological engineer. It's just under the umbrella of civil engineering. And part of the attraction there also was the fact that I get to be outside a lot, and I love being outside.
Well, I find it really interesting, even when I was in high school, how you have like the three foundations of science. You have biology, you have chemistry, and then you have physics, right? And I find it so interesting that if you're going the science or the engineering route, there's always one that you prefer.
Yeah, and it's funny that they kind of silo the sciences like that, but all of those fields overlap so immensely. And it gets to the foundational part of science, but not about the application at all. And I understand that, you know, you don't only have so much time and so much that you can squeeze into a teenager's brain, but it's really up to the people that you interact with, your teachers or your parents or family members, that can actually open up your eyes to what other possibilities are out there besides, you know, becoming a doctor or becoming a chemist or so on.
Thank you. And peace. I know Josephine actually discussed exactly why she kind of went into geological engineering, but could you explain what drew you to civil engineering specifically?
Civil engineering, I would say it has to do with a lot of mechanics, physics, like advanced physics. So that really caught my interest, coupled with the fact that I was very good. While I was in my teenage years, I would take a couch, put it at the front of my house, and I would literally draw the whole environment, the whole buildings around, just with a pencil and a ruler in like 3D. And people were so amazed sometimes when I submit assignments, and my teachers would be like, no, somebody did this assignment for you. You know, they started talking to my parents. So I would say even my teachers, they did play a role because they could see something in me that I wasn't even seeing in myself. So that pushed me further that I think this is the path I should go, civil engineering.
Very interesting. But yeah, it's very nice that your parents were an influence and helped you guys to be where you are now. Amazing engineers. So on International Women's Day, I think it's important that we discuss if there were any challenges or obstacles you faced as women pursuing a career in engineering.
Unfortunately, it's not all rainbows and sunshine yet, but I do think there's a lot of change that's happened even over my short career. But I do have to say that unconscious bias is still kind of alive and well in the industry. I think we're, at least me personally, I've been lucky not to experience, you know, open misogyny or anything like that. But there is sort of some unconscious things that people I've interacted with definitely still carry with them. And I think a big area for improvement is professional organizations. So not only organizations like the PEO that governs engineers in Ontario, but also, for example, organizations specific to different disciplines. I won't name them by name here, but I think it's still a bit of a tokenism that's going on. But yeah, that's my personal experience. But I do have to say it has changed for the better over my 10-year career so far.
I would say generally, like Josephine mentioned, I know there are some bias that could exist from you being a woman, sometimes people not being aware or practicing self-awareness of how their actions can actually, you know, influence others. Because as a woman, you have people who are maybe ahead of you, more versatile in the profession or got in before you. So you constantly have to keep updating your knowledge, keep updating your skills. So some of this bias unconsciously may exist for women.
Yeah, as Josephine said, and I'm agreeing with you piece as well, like every single day we're slowly moving forward, right? And making it easier for women to pursue engineering. So that's very interesting. So for myself personally, I find that I'm always second guessing myself. In a male dominated field, it can be a little bit challenging to be like, okay, but my opinion matters. Are there any ways that you guys overcome this bias or overcome people undermining you?
Yeah, for sure. I think the number one thing you can do is building a support network. There are more and more women entering into engineering, so you always can look at your peers or the people following you. But there are a few women, you know, ahead of us too that are great mentors, but also have great insight into how to, I don't want to say combat because that sounds more argumentative, but just basically stand up for yourself or call out bias when you encounter it.
Yeah, and Peace, how do you overcome this bias?
For me, I always focus on what I want at the time, and I remind myself of my why. Why am I here? Why am I doing this? And so because of that, I technically not give my attention to some of those bias. And then, of course, there are mentors who are always there, like Josephine said, to answer questions, to guide you, to ensure you are, you know, on the right track.
Yeah, I think the number one thing for women in engineering or in the STEM field alone is that just to believe in yourself, right?
I find that there's many misconceptions or stereotypes about women in engineering and in STEM. Were there any misconceptions or stereotypes that you guys had to face throughout your careers?
Yeah, there's a few that come to mind for this for me. The first, I'm going to talk specifically on the industry side of things, but my work involves a lot of field work and, you know, traveling and either going to remote locations. And one of the main stereotypes that project managers have about their staff that are women are that they have family obligations and they probably don't want to go or can't go. Instead of asking them if they're available or if they're interested, it's like a preconceived notion that, especially if they have kids or are childbearing age, that they probably have family obligations that prevents them from being able to take on those tasks or on those jobs. It's a very specific example, but it's something that can actually limit career growth when project managers or even higher up administrators in an organization make decisions based on staffing. And again, it's not a conscious decision like she's a woman, therefore she can't go. It's more of like that societal pattern that has been internalized by everyone that's like, oh, she's a woman, she has kids, she's probably the one that stays home with the kids and does most of the unpaid labor. So that's a big one that I've seen. I haven't had the opportunity to call out, but I do have friends who kind of question their project managers, like, oh, why wouldn't you send her? She's very good at what she does. The other big one that comes to mind is the preconceived notion that women are better at administrative work, that we're more organized, that we're better communicators, and that the men are better at the technical work. Again, this is something that doesn't come out explicitly, but it is something that comes out implicitly. For example, in a meeting, I've been asked to take notes, even though I was the one leading the meeting or I'm the engineer of record, which just doesn't make sense because if I'm leading the meeting, why am I the one also taking notes? But it's just kind of the perception that I will be good at it because I'm female. Yeah, so those are kind of two main areas that I've seen in my career.
No, I completely agree. And Peace, do you have anything that you faced in terms of misconceptions or stereotypes?
I would say in terms of misconception and stereotypes in the industry, having spent like about 3.5 years in the industry, I didn't really face a kind of like challenge or stereotype because most times I was doing a site. I think now coming down to, you know, recruitment of women, I would say it is easier for women to collaborate with women sometimes. you know, the understanding, the companion. So there's need for awareness, for diversity, for inclusion to be a continuous thing, even in the recruitment process, both at educational level and in the industry. I think that is needed to bridge the gap.
And that's a perfect lead in to the next question. So we've been talking about the challenges that women face in STEM fields, but some of our listeners may be wondering, what are the unique perspectives or skills that women bring to the field of engineering? Why do we need more women in fields of engineering?
As I mentioned, I now work at a startup where it's a very cutting edge field using laser scanning technology, but still in the mining space. So we're kind of at this unique position where we're a technology company, but we work in a very male-dominated industry. And funnily enough, my company, every single department has a female lead who's either a technical specialist or a business specialist in the department, which is extremely unique. And because we have all these various hats that we wear, we're all particularly good at multitasking. I'm not saying that men are not good at multitasking, but this particular group of women is. And that really leads to more innovative thinking because everybody is willing to take different perspectives and throw an idea out there that may not be in their particular field of specialty, but still gets received by the group in a collaborative way without anybody standing on their ego and saying like, oh, I'm the expert on this. Like, why are you even talking about this? So I think that it's not just like the tokenism that we hear about a lot that you should put a woman on your team. There's actually research that has been done to show that increased diversity increases innovation. And today we're talking about women in engineering, but that's all kinds of diversity. And there's a really good book that I'll plug here because I just think it opened my mind. It's called Invisible Women, and it's about data bias across all different fields. But one specific chapter talks about research in peacekeeping negotiations. So there was research done on UN peacekeeping negotiations where they kind of tracked which negotiations had women involved and what position they had, whether they were in a decision-making position or just kind of present. And they showed that women who had an active role in the negotiations, those negotiations actually led to more positive outcomes in those regions. So I think it just goes to show that women bring a more collaborative perspective into discussions. And so it can stay collaborative as opposed to tipping over into animosity.
Okay. In addition to what Josephine has said, I totally can relate with that. Women somehow bring some level of understanding, empathy, teamwork, multitasking. It's a unique perspective. Having a woman as a team is a plus because she brings a lot of skills, a lot of diversity into the field of engineering.
Yeah, you have to agree with that. Like, diversity and inclusion are so crucial for innovation. As Josephine said, whether it's including women or people of color, it's always going to help the team even more. So how can organizations foster a more inclusive and supportive environment for women in engineering?
I think this goes to leading by example. So there are lots of engineering organizations who say that EDI is important to them. And then you look at their board of directors and it's all white men. So it's that whole idea of walking the walk. You can't just say that something is important to you and not demonstrate that it's important to you. And as we were just talking about, it's not just a feel-good initiative. It actually makes good business sense to have more diversity, including more women in the room when decisions are being made. And so, yeah, for organizations, it's making that concerted effort to put women and minorities in positions of power.
And Peace, how do you think that organizations can foster a more inclusive and supportive environment for women in engineering?
First of all, they need to invest resources into their people. More training and sensitization needs to be done. Some people don't know what diversity is. They don't know what inclusion is. As you recruit more employees and students, you should be made aware of what the organization stands for, what their values, what they represent, both among the staff, among the students, among the employees. Another thing is partnering with organizations such as maybe Women in Engineering, Society of Women Engineers. These are like key champions and organizations really focused on diversity and inclusion. It could be a way to partner, to create work groups, resource groups for collaboration, for diversity, for inclusion. Another thing is there could be training and funding so that in the real sense of it, people are carrying out their daily activities, but at the same time, they are being made aware of how they can actively demonstrate the values of the organization, which if diversity and inclusion is a critical aspect, it will be good for everyone to be self-aware. And this way we create that environment both for minorities, for Blacks, for racialized people to be able to reach their full potentials.
Amazing insight from you both. And we were talking about this earlier about how the industry is getting better over time. And that's all because of hard work from both people of color as well as women in the field. So have you guys personally noticed any changes in the engineering industry in terms of gender equality or diversity over the years?
Yeah, for sure. I think especially in academia, I've noticed the change. Lausanne and the Department of Civil Engineering specifically is a great example. When I started in 2018, there were very few female professors, and now there are quite a few. And even if you look at the graduate student population, it's close to 50-50, which is really good. But that hasn't really trickled too much into the industry yet, at least the industry that I work in, mining and underground infrastructure. It's still white male dominated. And there's a concept called the leaky pipeline. I think we still suffer quite a bit from that, where women enter into the workforce, don't feel welcome or included, and then either shift careers entirely or become homemakers, depending on their situation. And so I think there's obviously still work to be done, but having more women in academia and in doing research and even in the undergraduate population is a great start. Now we just need to foster a welcoming environment so that when they leave those institutions, that they feel engineering is a place for them. This is specific to the Canadian industry. I've worked in other industries. Specifically, what comes to mind is in Brazil. They're a little further ahead of us in this trend. So a lot of the older folks who are in positions of power have already retired, which is something that we're coming up to in the next 10 years. And in their place, they made a concerted effort to hire young women. And so now they're at most of the mines that I've worked in Brazil. There are young women that are in charge of the rock mechanics departments or ground control or long-term planning, which is unheard of in Canada. That's very unusual. So I see that as a bright light, like that we're heading in that direction, that if we make a concerted effort, that we can be there too in the next 5 to 10 years.
And peace. Have you noticed any changes in the engineering industry in terms of gender equality and diversity?
Yes, I would say there's been some changes in the educational sector, like in universities, for example. Before, it was a bit difficult for women to progress in their career, maybe after raising a family, giving birth, to continue to go to school or to even get back into the workforce. So some schools have scholarships for women, maybe who have taken a break in their career and want to progress with their education. Some companies have re-entry programs for women who have also taken break. So well, I think the institutions, educational institutions like universities and all, yes, there's some progress, because just by interacting with fellow graduate students, like Josephine said, there's quite some population of female students here at LaSalle. So I feel there's still more that could be done at the industry level, so that when we create this diversity and gender equality goals and strategies, employees can also take some of these values to their next places of work, and we can all create that collaborative and welcoming environment for women.
And so what does we as a society do to support women in engineering, especially in those leadership roles?
Yeah, I think it's going back to what I was saying earlier, it's a concerted effort. Like there's a pretty kind of famous viewpoint that is, you know, if you just expect diversity to happen without any effort, if you just think that the trend we're going on is going to be enough, we can wait another 100 years before we have gender parity. It really takes intentional action and intentional change. And whether that be, I mean, I don't want to litigate the merit of quotas or anything like that, but whether it be some sort of mandate to hire a certain percentage of women or put certain percentage of women in leadership, there have to be metrics to hold organizations to account. And if you just think, oh, we'll get there just because we want to and we think it's a good idea, that's not good enough, because you have no standard to hold yourself up to. I think that is kind of the main point I would make on that subject, is that we have to demand that of our organizations. We're starting to do that on the climate change side of things, that we expect companies to be more environmentally conscious. We can also start to do that on the diversity side of things, where we only support corporations, for example, with investments that have gender parity on the board or minorities represented and so on. It's really the pressure from consumers or from the public that will put on that kind of change. And then for those of us that are in decision-making positions in our organizations, it's challenging hiring techniques, for example, to make sure that you're either doing blind hiring or using other techniques to make sure that you're not creating an echo chamber of people that look and think like you in your organization.
Yeah. And peace, would you like to chime in?
Yeah, I would just chip in something like that. Hiring more female engineers, it's a good way to start by ensuring that, you know, across teams, across levels, across the board, you have representative of women, and also creating an equity, a kind of balance. For example, we know that there are lots of males in engineering. It's a male-dominated profession. And you can make them even like a resource for women. There's this initiative Society of Women Engineers have. They call it He for She. They can become even resource for the women. They can become allies, partners, so to make this work. So I believe being able to incorporate these at organization levels, in educational institutions, it's going to go a long way to bring about some positive developments that we actually want.
I 100% agree with both of you. I find that mentorship is another way to support women in STEM. Have you both had any mentors who played a significant role in your engineering journey?
Okay, I would say yes. Mentoring is needed and is crucial in the engineering profession because definitely it's a path that you want to walk that you haven't walked before. So what I typically do is if I want to do something and I find someone who is successful at what I want to do, I don't mind, you know, asking for some sort of guidance. I remember during my undergraduate when I just came to campus, and I met this lady who was like the most intelligent lady in the department. Quite a number of people spoke to me about her. So I was kind of on the look, oh, I hope to meet her someday. And somehow we got to meet. So she was my mentor during my undergraduate. And it was really helpful because there are times you have questions, things you haven't done before. You just want to speak to someone. It's really helpful for your success.
Yeah, it's definitely a mentorship is crucial in an engineering field because it is a technical field. In the end, it's not just about feeling socially supported, but also technically supported in the decisions that we make as engineers. We carry quite a burden to protect society and safety of the people on the sites that we work on, especially in civil engineering. So it's important that you have mentors that are also technically very sound and can point you in the right directions. But in order to ask questions of your mentors, you have to feel comfortable talking to them. And I've had a mix of mentors. I would say, unfortunately, a lot of them were not women or minorities, but that's just the makeup of my industry. But they were all supportive. And I think the thing that they all had in common is that they never made me feel stupid for asking a question. One of them even always would say to me, there's no stupid questions, only stupid answers. And I always really liked that because he basically laid the groundwork to say, I'm not going to judge you for what you ask me. And I prefer that you just ask the question than to flounder and maybe make a decision that isn't right or might put something in jeopardy. So that's the one side of like my personal experience with mentorship. Going forward, I think it's important for those of us who stay in the industry and who work our ways into leadership positions, either on the managerial side or on the technical side, that we don't quote unquote pull the ladder up behind us, but actually reach a hand out to the students who come up behind us. And I'm now in a position where people reach out to me on LinkedIn to ask for career advice or ask my opinion on something. And I have a personal policy that I'll never say no. If someone makes the effort to reach out, I know how hard that is. It feels like you're putting yourself out there and you're opening yourself up to rejection, even though it's less social capital than in your personal life. In your professional life, it's really important that if you get inbound requests for people asking for your insight, that you offer that help, especially if they might be coming from a similar perspective as you and don't know which way to look. A lot of women don't have women family members or mentors that are also engineers. And so they're looking for that mentorship from outside of themselves. And so, yeah, I think that's something that's really important is that as much as you get from the mentors that mentored you, that you pass that on to the people coming up behind you as well.
And so talking about perspective, how has collaboration with other women in engineering helped your perspective, both in academia and in the industry?
Yeah, I can think of a very specific example of this. I was at the Canadian Geotechnical Society conference a couple of years ago, and there was a panel discussion that was specifically aimed at young professionals. And they had one of the professors from Lassonde, Dr. Magdalena Kroll, she was on this panel. And I remember her saying in her introduction, you know, she gave her technical background, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, I'm also a mother of two, and I had my kids and raised them at the beginning of my career. And I'm happy to talk about the challenges surrounding that as well, if there are people in the audience that have questions about that. And I just thought that was such a warm welcome to people in the audience to feel comfortable to ask about how work life intersects with personal life that I've never really seen put that explicitly before. I guess it's not quite answering your question directly because it wasn't a collaboration in the sense that we work together, but it did make me feel much more comfortable to approach her in the department later on, knowing that she basically humanized herself and wasn't trying to put up this kind of steel wall where I'm an engineer over here and I'm a mom over here and those two worlds don't intersect. But I'm, you know, I'm all of these things at the same time. And even though I never had the pleasure of working with her, she's in a very different field than I am. I am happy to call her one of my friends. And I look up to her because she made that balance and she makes herself very approachable to her grad students. So again, going back to the collaboration piece, I think women have the unique challenge of being all of the things that they are at the same time. At work, you'll find that your female colleagues will take calls from their kids that want to know if they can have a cookie, or you'll have them have to leave to pick up their kids from work or so on. So they're always, you know, they're the mom, they're an engineer, they're the project manager, they're running their household all at the same time. And that makes them really good engineers as well.
And Peace, what about yourself?
I would say to support women in engineering as a society, first of all, investing into their training, education and development is a key thing. Secondly, investing into their technical capabilities. It is good to invest into their professional development and growth by sponsoring them in some skill set. For instance, when I was growing up, when I hear an engineer, the male figure comes to mind. Oh, it's a man on site, it's a man. No, I have also like met women in charge of sites, in charge of projects, as project managers, as lead civil engineers and structural engineers. And I feel giving them the opportunity to express their technical capacities and also holding them accountable is a way as a society we can support women in engineering.
Yeah, as we're nearing the end here, I want to ask, what can be done to inspire and engage more young women in pursuing engineering careers?
I think that there's a lot of outreach that needs to happen. Like I mentioned before, there are a lot of women, if they don't have engineers in their immediate circle, they don't know that that's really an option. When you're in elementary school or high school, you think you know maybe what an engineer is. You might have a few examples, but it is actually such a broad field. Like everything you see has engineering involved with it. And so it's really dependent on universities reaching out to elementary schools and high schools and running camps and those types of things. And we have a perfect example here at LaSonde. The K2I program has, you know, won awards and grants and those types of things because it does amazing things for inspiring girls to see themselves in those roles. So when you ask them what is an engineer, they can picture themselves and not a man.
So I feel that to engage more women, to inspire younger women to pursue engineering, from the point of entry, there needs to be lots of outreach and recruitment to these high schools, to where the young folks are, to engage them. Also some sort of hands-on technical activities that can make them think, that can give them collaborative skills, problem-solving skills, you know, to fine-tune their thinking. And that could also influence that thought of what do I want to be? Do I want to take this? Just also listening to women speak about their different careers from different fields and at different levels. It's also a way to reach out to these women. And also when they are being hired or recruited into universities or into companies, that supportive network to always engage, for instance, sponsoring them for technical conferences, for women conferences, things that will contribute to their professional and personal development as individuals. Because they are not just brought in to be left alone to themselves, but they can also see and feel the support from the community. I think that would also help to engage young women more.
Yes, it would. So lastly, as two successful women in engineering, today on International Women's Day, what advice would you give to aspiring female engineers or young girls who want to join STEM who may be facing challenges or contemplating a career in this field?
The main thing I would say is not to be afraid, that the field is much friendlier than it looks like from the outside. Come in, the water's warm. And the main thing, especially for young engineers who are either in their education or in the first years of their career, is that they should ask for the opportunities that they want. If you sit and wait for someone to offer you something, you might be waiting for a long time. And if you ask, the worst thing that can happen is that someone says no. And I think as women, we're often socialized to be polite and, you know, not to rush to the front and those types of things. But if you want to try something, if you want to work on a certain project, if you want to work with a certain team member or do a graduate study in a particular topic, you just have to ask. The worst thing that's going to happen is someone might say no, and then you just ask somebody else.
For me, I would say for women who wants to get into engineering, you should be yourself and also know what you want and be willing to take those little steps. I call them little steps, but those are the little drops of water makes a mighty ocean. So be ready to take chances, be ready to take the risk, and then, of course, be open-minded to learning each day.
Yeah, when one door closes, another one opens. So thank you so much both for joining us today. Thank you, Josephine, and thank you, Peace, for your insight and inspiring words for all other female engineers or possibly future engineers. Thank you so much both.
Thanks for having us. Happy International Women's Day.
I wish you all the same.
As we conclude this enlightening episode, thank you to Peace and Josephine for sharing their experiences and wisdom. Their stories remind us that diversity, inclusion, and perseverance are drivers for innovation in engineering.